Okay, now we are starting the second part. Parker's had a virus problem on his computer, and he's not available, but I'm sure he'll chime in a little bit later on. The PDF file that we have here has five charts in it, and you can scroll through it. It's a better way of presentation, I think. And so what we've done is we've got the first chart, which is the S&P normal chart that we use for looking out at the long-term trends. You see we have a current T up at the top of the June 13th peak, but we've been focusing on the QE2 T, which is center-pointed, is mid-pointed for the double bottom in the November time period of last year. And the projected top, according to Parker's calculation, was May 4th. That's the little peak that we have here, and it came out a little bit early. And it has come down, and the oscillator has come down. You see it's a slightly lower low, and I have a false bottom indication. Indicating my forecast, which is that this rally is going to die out, and we're going to drop down, and we're going to find out what's going to happen relative to that in a few days. What I wanted to talk about here in the first chart is that we want to talk about a. Hi, Parker. Hi, Parker.
Sorry, I lost you there.
Oh, yeah. Okay, all right. Well, okay, Parker's back in here. So we're talking about the first chart, which is the QE2, the QE2T is the one that we're facing on with the midpoint. That was a May 4th peak, right?
Yes, with the split bottoms in November,
right,
it's a May 4th
right.
Peak.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that was the, and now remember that when you, anytime you're doing time projections, you really want to look at the channel. And if you look at the channel, you'll see that the green line, which represents the bars, when it got up to the red line and then it collapsed. Whenever you have a top pattern, having the S&P get up to the red line is like what they call in the subways, the third rail, don't step on it because it'll electrocute you. You can look back and you can see other places where you popped up. You're never sure whether one top is going to give you a problem, but they always have corrections when you get up there because it's the way it's been planned out in the equations is that's sort of a speculative type peak. The only place that isn't a problem is when you're coming out of a bear market and you the first time you blow up coming out of a bear market low, you tend to run into these tops, but that's the case where your upside momentum is bullish because it demonstrates the turn. In this one, it isn't particularly true. Now, as I said, Parker, the false bottom here is, in my opinion, that this rally is going to peter out, and it's going to roll over, and it's going to come down again to another low. One of the reasons, there's a couple of reasons. One of the reasons is that the QE2T represents a projection of a top that encompasses back from June of last year, the left end of the T, out to the present time period. And when those T's project tops, they don't project four-day declines. It's very likely that if you had a strive for later, you'll get a partial recovery. But that is more likely, because it's a big T with a top on it, to be an ABC wave down. Whether it is that that's the A wave, you get the B wave is coming back up here, then you get another wave down, which is C wave. The second thing is I have received from people who are extremely competent in cycle projections, the common projection of a top on the 16th of May, which by coincidence happens to be our next publication date, that's a Monday from this Monday. And under ordinary circumstances, they would be correct. However, when you go off a T, what often happens is the projection of a top turns out to get into a cycle inversion, and you go down into that date. So it's real simple. You just watch it going up, and if it rolls over, the selling climax low is on the 16th. That would be my forecast based on that one. But the other observation was I was kind enough to get an email from Bill at the McClellan Oscillator, worked for the McClellan Oscillator organization. And they let me into a research project in which they noted that the price of copper, when you plot the price of copper against the stock market, like the S&P 500, you see when you see a divergence, stock market is strong, but the copper rallies and then it starts to slide out. That's a negative divergence, and they recorded seven of those in recent history, which I guess it's probably about this chart's time span, and every one of them led to an important short-term decline. They didn't say it was a bear market. They just said it was an important short-term decline. That is a good research project for anybody that. And then that preceded the breakdown in commodities. Copper is a commodity. It preceded the breakdown in commodities, which includes the gold, the silver, which we're going to talk about later on. And it was picked up by Barron's in one of their blogs as a notable event that they had published this data and, you know, looked like it worked okay. All right. So I'm very indebted to get that, because it really what it meant is that when you went up to this top of the envelope, or you were looking for the T-top, that there was another way to do that. And I would say that if you're interested in pursuing some of these things, now Parker's done analysis. We've done analysis on copper under the assumption that copper is an economically sensitive issue, and Parker may well wish to speak to that later on. But if you're interested in doing that, and you can get a free copy of stock markets, stockcharts.com, one of the ETFs that you can plot against the S&P 500 to duplicate that address is JJC, and another one you can get is $copper, which is an index. Okay, and you'll be able to, you have to look at the stockcharts.com and figure out how you plot the, you know, what the readings are that allow you to plot one on top of the other. And you can look at divergence. Divergence is simply the market's strong and the copper's starting to fade off, and, you know, something's not in sync here. And you could test that for yourself, and you can continue to watch on it. Now, that's just a copycat analysis. In other words, you're just verifying that it was somebody else did a study, and it was, you know, you understand what it is, and maybe it's going to turn out to be important to know. But a more imaginative use of that one is to say, if copper is a leading indicator, why is it that when you get to a bottom, does copper lead you coming out? In other words, the markets have got the woes. In this case, everybody's bullish, okay? You got something that says it's a fly in the ointment, okay? So at some point, you're going to find out this market's going to, and the people are going to be, oh, whoa, the market's not making it, it'll never come out. Well, that's when you want to look at the copper and say, hey, do you think the copper is getting stronger? Back in last summer, when we were in that bottom pattern, I received people who are professional traders were watching that for a signal. And it's very likely that's going to happen. So you don't want to just say, well, somebody says this copper made a divergence on the top. You want to remember that it ought to be able to work on the top. Mama. Of course, the question is, is this going to work or not? Well, I have to think that the McClellan people weren't forecasting a four-day decline any more than QE2-3 is about. There's something bigger. There's another wave structure on the downtrend, and there's a series of declines that you're going to see. And I would point out, as just in case you don't know this, that if the green bars get underneath the black line, they're going down to the red. They're going down to the green line. And if you're down at the green line, which is that means the market just changed trend. You have to wonder whether the third mega T has turned over. Definitely, it's an intermediate decline. If you get down to that far, if you get down that, probably it's safe to say that that's an intermediate decline. But since we do have a mega T, floating around here and here somewhere, I would say that's possibly it. It is possible that you're going to go, the outside is going down below minus 100 level or something like that, and then you're going to find a rising bottom, and you're going to come out of it. But in the past, Parker's corrected that, assumed that these cycle lows, which are numbered 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, the next one, 9, is in early July, and very early July, and that may mean that this T that says to June 13 is going to get cut off. The interesting thing, which Parker will talk about, which I will talk about in the next chart. I think Parker's going to talk about too in the last two charts, is that if this thing starts to break down and people start getting scary, you know, like they don't like certain things going on in here, there is historical evidence that there is a tendency for people who get nervous about this to buy gold as a problem zone. This is, and I'll talk to you about this in the next slide. And this sort of becomes it's possible that you can go down on the market here and you get this run for the. That's not a wise decision in our collective opinion. It could get some boost from this problem that if we see the problem coming under the black line, going down to the green line in the channels there, that you have that problem, but it's possible that you can get something going on in gold. But gold is pretty much, in my opinion, is taken care of. I have some other reasons for this, Roger. I received the mail a little while ago, and I won't comment it until we get to next week. But the gist of the story is when we come back with the T3 observations next Monday. My opinion is it'll have folded on the downside, not gone up. Okay, we'll take it on from there. Now let's go down to the second chart, which is the RST oscillators for the Tocqueville gold, and you can see that we've had a drop in gold, and you can see the RSI indicators come down to 49.32, which is not a that's not a catastrophic trend, right, Parker? As long as it doesn't go any lower than that.
Right. No. The range for uptrends in the RSI is generally 40 on the downside. So as long as it stays above 40, you're still okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Time-wise, we're okay too. Okay. So that's, I just wanted to make that simulation on the bottom results. I would point out that just RST number one, you didn't have a top until you got into 08 for a while. It came up a little bit early, but you didn't get into that. And that's really the gold buyers. See, by October of 07, the market was making a top and it was declining into the period of the first 3 months of 08. And that's really buying, because by then they knew about the mortgage security problem. And that's really gold buying that lingers. Say it's a lingering buy because they saw the problem. So it's a disconnect between the two. But generally, the RST one was right, and I think RST number two is probably going to be right too. So the divergence is that late buying is a place to sell, not anything else. Now, the other thing I want to talk about while we have this chart in hands is that because there was a surprise last year. Well, it says correction there. I believe you're going into a correction, and I have previously stated that's a stock, that's a commodity bubble. Okay. Now, the people that write these hack writers, they're writing for the little people. You know, they always talk that big money is all into commodities. I think that's going to turn out to be a big mistake because in the whole sequence of this operation, what you find out is that a fund like Tocqueville Gold makes its money out of what it gets out of the ground, okay, which is mostly its gold, but there's some silver in there, and there's a lot of copper, because copper is found with gold. In modern mining methods, you have to sift through an enormous amount of soil. A lot of that is they're getting the metals out. They leach it, and they got copper and they get gold. The gold is worth more than copper, but it's getting very expensive.
Terry, can I interject? When mm-hmm. I understand you to have a mega T in gold that lasts until 2020. So you're not saying this commodity thing is over for good, right? You're just saying it's going to correct for a little bit and then resume its uptrend, correct?
Right. But I did want to, my third thing that I want to talk about is the news that there's two great, very successful traders, George Soros and there's John Paulson, who have recently been in gold, but their divergent analyses has led them to do opposite things. And I wanted to comment on that because it's not a simple problem to deal with, okay? And it is true, Parker, that there is a long-term picture in which the mega T in gold goes up to the year 2020. And so this is interpreted as a correction. But for a person who's on the sidelines just listening to the news that was interesting last week was that George Soros said, who is known to have bought, been a bought a large position in gold, says, I sold mine all a month ago. Okay? So a person says, well, if George Soros got out, why should I be in? At the same time, John Paulson, who's a very successful investor, made a lot of money, is reported to have stockpiled gold bars, tested, have to drill little holes in them, make sure they're okay, and put them into a secure location for a very long period of time, never to be touched. Okay, so you have two people that are incompetent. One of them says it's going up to, he says the gold is going up to 4,000. Our projection for 2020 on gold is would be more like 4,800. Okay, but that's 4,000. That's a conservative number. So we don't have any objection with his. I don't have any objection with Soros saying it's a top here either. Okay, but the thing that you don't understand when you listen to these talks is that just because John Paulson may have a stockpile, which is going to be there for some years, it does not mean that he can't see a problem and go and buy a whole bunch of put options on gold with other monies, okay, which is going to make money in a correction, which he sees might be the possibility, and limits his loss on the one that's in the big cave there, the stockpile bars, okay? So they play things both ways, and if you just saddle into the guy's got he's got this stuff, the gold is going to 4,000, why should I worry? He could be doing something clever where he understands that. By the same token, George Soros may be out of the gold, but if he sells, because there's too many people, he sees the amateurs are jumping in on all the silver, he says very uncomfortable he gets out of that. But some months down in the future, he sees that there's a panic going on the amateurs that bought this stuff and they're all coughing it up. Somebody comes in and says, there's a crash going on in silver. He could very well, I'm not saying what he's going to say, but I'm saying he could very well say, all right, start buying the gold, but release a statement to the effect that we think that it probably has further to go, because that's in his self-interest. He wants people to think, and he's probably right about it. He does think it has further to go, but he would prefer to take a negative view at this time because it's going to drive more selling into his ability to buy, because he buys on a scale going down, because he's an infinite amount of wealth relative to the trade that he's doing. So you don't want to try and read a lot of this about what the big boys are doing here. They could be playing tricks both sides of the game, and because they're successful, I think that probably that's what's going on. And so what we do is we just have to stick to doing some things. Parker has expressed to me in private certain Elliott wave counts that go into this thing going up in the 2020 area, but we're not going to talk about them. And we're not going to talk about it in the seminar, because there will be insufficient information to do it. We do believe that it is possible, but we're not certain about this, that that these corrections, plus a market correction, could last into the latter part of 2012. And we will probably want to do a seminar at that time period. And if that seminar coming into the point where you do have a decline in these precious metals or in the stock market, that comes from the 40-year cycle, which we previously stated. Okay, it's early 2013 or late 2012. If that's the situation that we find 1 year from now, we'll probably end up doing that seminar, not be talking about anything about the money flow teas. That's going to be old history, because we have released all that thing. And we're going to start talking about, is gold, we're going to say, gold could be down, but here's this enormous potential to go to 4,000. So we should start working on that as the bottom zones. But as far as doing it here is concerned, there's no sense in talking about it at the present seminar, because all we're going to do is say it fell off. We might say something like, look, if it fell off the tee, we'll just say it fell off the tee. And then we're going to say, for as far as we know, it isn't going to bottom out until the latter part of next year. And I have nothing else to add, because we have no other information. Because T-theory doesn't have a bottom configuration sign. Maybe Parker's going to come up and he's going to say to something, I have these gigantic money flow T's. Money flow T's do work on the downside, but he won't be able to do anything in that until he gets there. Okay, so he'd have to see the drop off before he can see anything, and a momentum downside. So that's not going to. Well, we could say something about it, but that's conjecture. It's intelligent conjecture. So let's move on to the third chart, which is TLT. And if you've seen any of our best bonds strategy information, we use VUSTX, but TLT by Barclays is perfectly adequate. The Treasury bonds have a maturity of 20 plus years. VUSTX is generally classified as about 18 years, and it's a little bit more dynamic. But you'll see that I have drawn a green T. It says new long-term Treasury bond T. And the SHS at the bottom is the terminology used for a head and shoulders reversal pattern. It turns out that very, very common ways for you to have a saucer type bottom is that you go through cyclical lows, and it looks like a person, the head and the shoulders is a person that's hanging upside down, where the head is the deepest one, and the shoulders are at a higher level, but they're sort of comparable. So there's a sort of a symmetry here as you make the rounding terms out. My opinion is that is a long-term Treasury bond T, okay, with a projected peak, and that projected peak is about 2.5 months since this chart was made, which was Friday. So I believe that's going up for 2 months. Now, relative to the common everyday guys, you've been listening to PIMCO's production that you should short bonds, which is not going to go over well with the Treasury people. And I think that reversal pattern is going to cause the Treasury bonds to go up, partly because the QE2 is gone, partly because there could be setbacks in the economy which take away the threat of inflation, which is why these bonds go up. But these bonds are known as bad news bonds, because only bad news tends to drive them up. It's the integral part of the best bond strategy, where you use these instead of a short sale. You know, it's a more conservative one. You're earning interest, and if you get into trouble, there's a large segment of the population that buys treasuries of some type. There is a companion fund, IEF, which is a shorter maturity, which is a little bit more conservative, but any kind of treasury bond that goes out in the order of 10 years or 20 years, they're either 10 years or 20 years, vaguely, a little bit different than that. These would be projected to have their run-up, and all the people who are short bonds could cause problems. Now, I would say that both Park and I both have reasons to believe that there's going to be a hesitation here, so we're not talking about you have to buy bonds today or anything like that, but this is another one of those things you just look at it and you'll see some kind of correction. That I think that correction would be a buy, because there's another 2.5 months to go up. Okay, now I'm going to turn the rest of this over to Parker. Parker, you can comment about this chart and the next two charts. Go right ahead.
Well, sure. On the head and shoulders pattern on TLT, it would not surprise me to see it come back to retest the neckline, which is at about 93.94, before it takes off again. Now let's go to the next chart, which is silver, and noted here that late the week of April the 25th, when silver was kind of vulnerable and making a top pattern, the COMEX came in and raised the margin requirements by 23%, and then they raised them again on May 3rd when it was in free fall by 11%, all of which combined to suppress demand and accelerate this downtrend that we've seen. I didn't draw the line on here, but what you saw was that silver basically found support at its 100-day moving average, and it's up this morning. I would not be surprised to see that relief rally back into the 40s. Now let's go to the gold chart, which is at the end. Hold on 1 second. Okay, in the gold chart, basically we've had support at the 50-day moving average and or above the 50-day moving average, and you can see that even though silver corrected all the way back to its 100-day moving average, gold did not even get back to its 50-day. So it's acting a little stronger than silver. At the prior tops in October, November, December, there was some negative divergence between the price of gold and the RSI, and I've drawn that, what that might look like here in the black dotted lines.
They got reversed.
If we get a reversal and we make a token new high, you should expect to see the RSI making a lower high, and that would be an excellent signal to take profits. Okay. And that's all I've got, Terry.
Okay. Now, Parker, just to prevent anyone from sending you letters to tell you that you've got the chart wrong, I would have to say that the chart that you have has I had a problem with the chart. I had the program that does the chart, I had a problem with it, okay? So what I did is my fourth chart is gold and the fifth chart is silver, and the one that I sent you is silver for the fourth chart back with the gold. But there's not going to be a problem on that one, but I just raised that as a, you know.
Oh, okay. I
by the time I straightened out what the problem was, I had two extra blank charts at the bottom. They ended up getting flipped over, and I didn't realize that was the case. Okay, so we're going to plan to follow up on this, aren't we?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Now, we have the advantage that it's now just a little after 10, and I can see that the Dow is up. The whole market complex is up, barely up. Okay, and we see that the gold is up $11. Oil is up. And the global Dow is down 15, so apparently the Europeans are worried about something about that. But it does not appear that the rally into the 16th is taking place after a modest day on Friday. So as we close this down, I would just say that I think that the market is going to roll over into the 16th. I have another letter from a West German, which is very interesting, which I'll talk about next week, and he's saying it could be the 17th. So, you know, big deal on that one. I think that probably we'll just thanks for checking in, and we'll be back next Monday. Hopefully we'll get some of the audio problems taken care of, and I think you'll find out that this is pretty interesting. And if you're interested in the seminar, I think you're going to find out there's a lot going for it. It's going to be different than one of those you just sit down and then you go away. You don't hear anything more from us. It'll be something that you want to refer to in the past. Thank you very much for joining me, Parker.
Thank you, Terry. Good day.
Okay, and everybody have a good day, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.